Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Deep Water, a program on religion, culture, and public affairs. The theme of the program is that we as faith communities are only in our social ministries up to our ankles. We ought to be over our heads, hence the name Deep Water. Our panelists are the Reverend Angela Ying of Bethany United Church of Christ on Beacon Hill in Seattle, Rabbi Jim Morrell of Temple B'nai Torah in Bellevue, the Reverend Dr. Robert Jeffrey, Senior Minister at New Hope Missionary Baptist Church in Seattle, and Jeff Siddiqui, a member of the Greater Puget Sound Muslim Community. My name is Don McKenzie, and I'm Minister and Head of Staff at University Congregational United Church of Christ. So the question before us on this Sunday morning following our President's State of the Union address has to do with the meaning of evil, because he used the phrase the axis of evil. And it strikes me that the meaning of evil is part of our business, and we should have something to say about that. And so let's have a conversation this morning about the meaning of evil in this culture. What's going on? What are the aspects of it? Where do we find it? And so forth. Jeff, do you want to start with some of your observations?
It is such a difficult question. In my mind, it is not simply enough to consider the meaning of evil or the definition or whatever, but to go that next step and say, what do you do when you see evil? Mm. What must you do? What can you do? What should you do? And clearly, not all of us are equipped physically or mentally or in any of those other senses to actually stand up to a 300-pound linebacker and say, you can't beat up this person. Mm. But away from that extreme, there is something else we can do. I heard only a portion of the president's address, and I was struck by how easily he used the word evil mm-hmm. when he was defining Koreans, when he was defining Iranians, when he was defining the Iraqis. Of course, they are the faceless people that we mm-hmm. can easily dismiss, and how swiftly and unequivocally he was saying this is an axis of evil and implying that we're about to come and destroy it. Yet, the next day, he was talking to a group of people and saying you should smother evil with love and compassion. Give 2 years of your life into voluntary help to the community. And I was thinking, so which evil are you picking to take what kind of action on? And is one evil more acceptable than another? Is one evil more condonable than another? And is an extreme action against somebody else's extreme action any better? It's like, let's execute the killer, you know. One is sanctioned and the other is perhaps sanctioned as well. Right. Those are extremely difficult yeah. questions. I've struggled with them for a long time. I don't know if I have an answer.
Anybody want to take a stab at defining evil and then saying whether or not the president is using the phrase in the way that you would that be in concert with your definition?
I think for me, evil is extreme negative action, which is informed by prejudice and some form of prejudice and the exclusion of a comprehensive understanding of the person or the situation that you are addressing, and it comes out purely out of your context and extreme action, which is negative. I think that a lot of people are guilty of that kind of behavior, and without taking into consideration your complicity mm-hmm. with it. Extreme actions are just where we are now. I think we're at a point in a place in world history where extremism is the norm, becoming the norm. And the justification for that is 9/11. I think that's a problem. One of the things that I take issue with the president is that when you start talking about evil, then you have to be comprehensive. You have to also talk about the mote in your own eye, when he was never Enron was never mentioned, and what they did to the hundreds of thousands of investors, and what they're doing to the economic landscape of America, and the whole sense of whether you can trust corporations, and they're still going around on jets, and people are losing everything. I think that's very evil, and I think to talk about evil in the context of others and not mention evil in the context of glaring context of your own complicity with it is a hypocrite, and I think that it's at worst it's hypocrisy, at best it's just warmongering, and I think that I'm very troubled by that oversight. As a moral leader, you have to be moral. And to be moral means you have to be fair. To be fair means you have to be inclusive, mm-hmm. of your own spots, not just the spots of others. And that's, we just got a lot of people up, like on a schoolyard. Everybody's calling everybody names, and nobody is looking at their own complicity with how we got to this point. And I think that this is very juvenile, and I think it's very dangerous for the world.
So the president seems to be using the phrase "the evil axis" to refer to people outside our culture, and is using the word evil in a political sense to direct attention, it seems to me, away from what's happening within our culture and toward those who were responsible for what happened on September 11th and so forth.
I think he's defining the world in relationship to me. He's saying that the evil people are the people who basically have a complaint against us. You're right. I mean, what you're saying, yeah, and that if we take care of these people, everything is going to be okay with America, and that's where we should address our energies. But that's just not the case, and it's an unfair assessment and analysis of what the world is about. And for a State of the Union message, I think it was just very poor. And I think that American people deserve a heck of a lot better than this.
Mm-hmm. Also, when you're focusing on, to add on to what you're saying, Barbara Jeffrey, is when you're focusing on access to evil in the way that the president was talking about, I mean, the concern that I have was anything, especially when we look at it, you know, in a world where we're living in a multiracial, multicultural, intergenerational, you know, multilingual world of and different, you know, international ways of looking and teaching our children and our children's children different ways and perspectives of relating to people. What's very scary or a real concern is that anything different, anything foreign, anything that does not seem to agree specifically to his specific ideas of what is good or outside the lines is what he seems to be pinpointing on. And that can be very dangerous, especially, I think, in our own faith communities or in our own ways of trying to build community, where you're looking much broader and saying, you know, the people that always are outcasted are the poor. Those that are, you know, the people of color that are struggling with language barriers or trying to find a way to really, you know, be a part of a larger community where they can share their gifts and who they are. For European and, you know, colleagues or people that even came on the Mayflower, for them to relate in a whole new way of seeing their own history and, you know, the problems that arise from the past, as well as how they related to people that were very different from them, and to see the gift that people bring, rather than to say, oh, they speak a different language, they carry out different traditions or rituals or even faith, you know, understandings, and because of that, because it's so foreign to us, you know, we're going to, you know, put them in a box, or we're going to name them something that will actually allow us in an illusional way to feel like, oh, we're bigger and badder and we can, you know, be in control. And I think being in control is an illusion in of itself. And yet what the faith community or the multiracial, multicultural, intergenerational, you know, kind of international perspective breaks through all those barriers and continues to ask the question, you know, how do we really connect to who is different? You know, why is it that all our different biblical stories and biblical prophets or Moses or others related to people that were completely different or from a different land? You know, and were even called to leave their land to go to a different land to make a difference. Mm-hmm.
One thing, when we talk about evil, you have to recognize that in the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic tradition, there is a whole theology of evil. And each group takes the same basic name, Satan, Satan, Shaitan. Mm-hmm. They all have the same idea that there's an enemy of God, and that's Satan, and that's the evil one. And that, well, I think when we use theological language to describe political realities, we're going down the wrong road. Because that kind of metaphysical, theological evil, we might recognize that that's something for God to determine. Mm-hmm. But for us, we have to, as Dr. Jeffrey was saying, we have to look at our own faults and our own deficits. That is what God calls us to do, not to judge others, judge ourselves. And if we're not really willing to understand the inherent injustices and unfairness of our own system and the disparities between rich and poor, which are so negative, and we don't have to use the word evil, just unjust, unfair, tragic. And that's something that was missing, in my opinion, from the President's State of the Union address. Focusing out there, what is bad, what is negative, without looking within. Now, here to me is an example of this inherent injustice. If a small grocery in Lynnwood is closed down, they freeze their assets because they're sending their support to their family back in Iraq, and they don't freeze the assets of the people who are running Enron. Now, what is the average people going to say? Well, the person who's rich and powerful, they're protected. But the little person, close them down, you know, seize their assets. You know, that to me speaks about injustice within our own system. So again, we have to be more self-critical. And that to me is what is missing from the leadership that we have now. Both Republicans and Democrats, mm-hmm. not enough self-reflection, too easily talking about the other as the one who's evil, mm-hmm. without looking within.
You know, I was thinking as you were speaking that in the Book of Psalms, which is common to all three of the traditions here at the table, there are about six psalms referred to as the penitential psalms. And I remember once during the season of Lent thinking it would be a good idea to use those in the liturgy. And I called a friend of mine in another city and I said, which ones are the penitential psalms? And he said, you know, I can't remember. So I had to read all the psalms. And I was amazed to discover how many psalms are psalms that say to God, the other guy did it, do something bad to him. Whereas only those few say, I did it, forgive me. Mm. And what I hear you saying, and I think we'd probably be of one mind about this, is that what we need as a culture right now is for our leadership to be able to examine the actions of things happening within our culture and to point out where there is no justice, where there's unfairness, where there's extremism.
I think that what I'm saying is that I think that we need leadership, world leadership, that models how we evolve. So when you talk about models, how we evolve, can we evolve as a world by seeing each other as evil people, or can we evolve as a world by seeing all of us as participants at the table to try to work out sane solutions for the progress of the world? Now, what we have now are leaders who are putting the world in a position whereby we have to either eradicate certain people. Mm-hmm. In groups, or we are at a stalemate. I think that that's irresponsible, mm-hmm. and I think that that's the kind of situation that's leading to what's going on in the Mideast right now, with Arafat being under siege in his own home. Regardless of what you think about Arafat, he is a national leader, and for Sharon to think that he could surround this man's palace because he has the power to do so, and get away with it. And say that he's any more guilty of corruption than Sharon has been, when Sharon, in many instances, has lived a life of provocation against the Palestinians. I mean, small things that only he knows, but he knows what he's done with his life. And to then suggest that he's any different from the leader of the Palestinians is hypocrisy at best, warmongering at worst. And I think that this is the kind of posturing and the kind of us against them that is being fostered by this country, which is one of the countries that have to set the tone. We have to set the tone. Somebody has to set the tone for what is decent and what is morally correct. We're not setting that kind of tone. And if we're not setting that kind of tone, how can we then call ourselves the leader of the free world? Because freedom calls into question. Freedom calls for us to be morally responsible. That's the real price of freedom, moral responsibility. And if you don't have that, then how can you be free?
It comes at a cost. It is easier to call oneself the leader of the world if the currency you're using is nuclear weapons, remote controlled weaponry, and the great dollar. But the most expensive currency that we sometimes are too short on is the moral currency. And when you talked about painting others as evil, and in a vision came, these are the seeds of genocide sometimes. I'm not saying they're right now, but in rhetoric such as this are contained genocidal actions. Those people are evil. They hate us. We must destroy them before they destroy us. Ask any Jew and he will tell you that he's familiar with this rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Ask any Bosnian, ask any Rwandan, and they'll all tell you they're familiar with this rhetoric.
And I think it's from a realistic point of view, we have to recognize that the extremists in the Al-Qaeda and the extremists in the Islamic camp use that same language.
Absolutely.
They use the same language.
Absolutely.
And obviously on September 11th they were successful, mm-hmm, in a very limited way of trying to put forth their ideology in action.
Absolutely.
But the reality is they don't have the power. They have the rhetoric, and they use the rhetoric of evil, the West being the great Satan, and no doubt about
Absolutely.
That. But we have to recognize that while we recognize the tragedy of September 11th, they don't have the power
Absolutely.
To do really anything of significance. So they're just speaking, they're just, you know, talking the talk.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the power to walk, the bad walk, yeah, of responding. And so we can't say, well, they're calling us evil, so we'll call them evil, because we're talking about a great superpower,
yeah,
and people with very, very limited power.
You know, it's just like African-Americans in this country, for example. African-Americans, you know, say the word racism all the time. All right. Well, we know that within the African-American community, there are a lot of African-Americans who are responsible for the plight of the community. I mean, churches, for example, take in billions of dollars and they give none of that money back to the community. You know, case can be made that they're just as bad as some of the whites who don't do anything for the community. And the case could be made. But the point is that the legitimacy of racism, the charge of racism, is that the whites have all of the money. They have the banks. They have the economic system. They have the currency. So therefore, they have a responsibility to take the burden to initiate change, and then to call the other people into their sense of responsibility. And I think you're right. I think nobody condones what happened 9/11. Nobody condones what Hamas is doing. Nobody condones what Hezbollah are doing. Nobody condones this. Everybody knows that this is evil. Everybody knows that if you send a person into a marketplace and you blow up, 100 people and you maim people, that's evil. But that's not the point. The point is that you then surround the prime minister's house, and do you then say he's responsible when, in fact, are you responsible for all of the acts of terror against the Palestinian people over historically? Are you responsible for the agitations that you yourself, Sharon, has committed against the Palestinians? So what I'm saying is that leadership demands a certain another kind of response. Mm-hmm. Leadership, when you become a leader of the free world, when you become a leader of people, then you say, I'm gonna be responsible. not just for my own emotional well-being, but responsible for the emotional well-being of the world. And that is just not happening. The level of statesmanship that we see going on in the world today, at a time when the world is crying out for people to really be real, is just really chilling. And I'm very afraid. I'm afraid of not just what happened in 9/11. I'm afraid of what the consequences of what I see going on now. And everybody is just sort of into their own camps, feeding themselves, and into their own selfish interests. And the world be damned. And I think it's tragic.
You know, one of the consequences of what I would call the personification of evil, that is to say, assuming that people are evil rather than the actions that they do, one of the consequences of that is the ability to separate oneself from that and say it's the other person, and those people need to be eliminated. Whereas, truthfully, I think from a theological point of view, we'd all agree that evil exists. People do evil things, but people themselves are not evil. Certainly, we associate evil with certain types of individuals and certain historical figures and so forth. But I think Robert has said it right. The word responsibility is key. And it's easy to shirk that responsibility by pointing the finger at other people rather than asking the question, why is this evil happening? And what is our role in it, in addition to the questions of safety and security and so forth like that.
And how can I continue to build community so that, you know, as Rabbi Morell was saying, you know, we begin to build or grow people of faith or people who want to make a difference, where there is genuine self-criticism or genuine self-awareness or genuine self-reflection, yeah, in a world as well as in a country that's very fast-paced, that's very reactionary, and that's very violent-oriented. You know, that to begin to you know, bring out the human touch or the human experiences of different people's lives really does involve sitting around a table in reflection and depth of meaning and understanding of other people's, you know, experiences and pain.
To get back a little bit to what Dr. Jeffrey was saying about the situation specifically in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, what I think needs to be done in the short run and maybe in the long run also is to bring people back to the table, like you were saying, Reverend Yang, to say, this is something that we have to take responsibility for as a country. When people are in crisis, what do we do? Do we just let it continue on? Do we turn our heads? Do we look the other way? We say, wait, this is a society in crisis. We, if we want to be called a superpower, we better be a superpower in terms of morality,
yeah,
mm-hmm, in terms of justice. And we have to say, we're not going to let another day pass. We're not going to send a low-level diplomat to the Middle East. We're going to send Secretary Colin Powell.
Should have been
there. He's going to be there. And President Bush. And not say, I'm not going to meet with somebody until the violence stops. Say, listen, we're in crisis. We better sit down and talk with the people. Because this is a touchstone. This is where, you know, fire starts here, go throughout the whole world. People are looking at it. And to say, well, we're fighting in the caves of Afghanistan, that's not a good enough answer. Mm-hmm. You know, sure there's some Marines there, but, you know, we have supposedly going to be the moral visionary for the world. So I agree with you. I don't like to see these tanks around Mr. Arafat's compound, but it's not going to go away just by saying it's wrong. It's wrong. You have to be on the ground. We have to be with them and say, we're going to sit down. We'll sit down in Ramallah. We'll sit down in Jerusalem. We don't care where it is. But what else, you know, this is our responsibility. We can't just let it go.
As Americans.
As Americans. As a world.
Well, as people who killed a lot of Afghanistans, and as people who have given billions and billions of dollars to the nation of Israel for its maintenance. People who gave them the jets and the tanks and the stuff meant to do what they're doing. We have a responsibility to make sure that we do all we can to make sure that things are just. And I don't think it's just because we are Americans. I think it's because of our complicity with what's going on. You know, I think that what is going on in the Middle East is fueling a lot of what's going on across the world. And I think that we're very naive if we don't really just deal with that. And to talk about an axis of power and never even address. I don't know the text that well, but I didn't see too much really real emphasis on what's going on in the Middle East, in the sense of what's going on with Arafat and what's going on with Sharon. Never even take them to task, both of them, about their complicity with the escalation of violence, and both of them about the deterioration of the situation. Not to take them to task, and not to take Enron to task, and not to take any of your buddies to task, and it's almost criminal.
It's tragic, I think, in the sense that a democracy is the one form of government where the opportunity to name and deal with moral issues by the entire population is possible, and yet it's not being done. And so we hope that something will happen to change all that.
You know, accepting ownership of a wrong, a committed wrong, whether by yourself or by proxy and acquiescence or, you know, to somebody else, and saying I'm sorry is perhaps one of the hardest things people can do, and is perhaps as close to an impossible action that a government can get to. And when an evil is committed, whether it was yesterday, last year, last decade, or 100, 200 years ago, for a government to say, we did it, we were wrong, we're sorry, let's go from here to the next step, we will make amends. Acknowledgement and apology, I think, are the very foundations of continuity and peace and coexistence. And our government has refused again and again to acknowledge and accept the wrongs it committed against the Africans and the Native Americans. Where can we start and where should we stop? And that perhaps is the first place to tackle evil, is to acknowledge its existence or that it happened and say, I'm sorry. I take responsibility. Even though I didn't do it with my hands, my grandfather did it, or his grandfather did it, or it was done with our money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To say, I am sorry it happened. We acknowledge the wrong. We will make amends. We will pay reparations. Can we now go as equals? Is the beginning of perhaps overcoming evil.
Great. Thanks, everybody. Well, that's our program for this month. Thanks to all our listeners. This program has been produced by Mike McCormick. Join us again next month for another step down into deep water. Until then, may God bless you and keep you.